This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo Ann. As you age, your motor skills can slow down, making it difficult for you to complete simple daily tasks or participate in your favourite hobbies. Now, this is where occupational therapy comes in to help older adults maintain their level of activity and lifestyle, and thus their sense of independence. So today on our Healthy Aging segment, we want to discuss the role of occupational therapy in an ageing population and how we can better include occupational therapy in policies concerning older adults as well. And to discuss that with me is Samantha Shan, occupational therapist and president of the World Federation of Occupational Therapists. Hi Samantha, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, it's a real pleasure to be here.
Let's talk a bit about occupational therapy itself first, right? Looking at the smaller picture in terms of occupational therapy for older adults. What is occupational therapy? And I guess how different is it from physical therapy as well? Because I know people often, myself included, have confused both terms. I'm sure there's a difference and hopefully you can enlighten me on that.
Yes, I think that's natural. People do put the two together, and occupational therapists and physiotherapists do work very closely together mm-hmm. in lots of cases. Occupational therapy is very functional based, so it's helping people to retain or regain or maintain their independence or interdependence, because none of us are totally independent, but mm-hmm. in activities of daily living. And for us in occupational therapy, occupations are everyday activities and occupations that we do. So often people think, oh, occupation, it's work related. Mm-hmm. We do enable people to go back to work after an illness or accident, but occupation for us is much broader. So it's anything and everything that somebody wants to and needs to do. So things from cleaning your teeth to brushing your hair, going to school, going to jobs, meeting friends for dinner, playing a game of football, anything that brings meaning to that person is what we class as an occupation.
Mm. So then I assume it would, you know, what therapy involves would differ depending on the needs of the individual.
Absolutely. It's very, very personalised. So what gives that person's meaning to life? So mm-hmm. to somebody that might be, you know, after an accident or an illness, that their main goal might be to go home. But mm-hmm. what are they going home to do? Is that to care for their children? Is it to go home and to return to work? Is it to be able to go out and socialise with friends? So our personalised approach is very much about what gives meaning to that person. And that is what is really the fundamental part of our assessment. So we wouldn't just teach somebody to stand. Mm-hmm. We need to know, well, why do they want to stand? And then look at that sort of process. We might help somebody to get dressed if they've had a stroke and their left arm might be much weaker. We might teach them dressing techniques. But it would be part of, like, why is that activity important to them? What do they want to be able to do once they are dressed and there? So it's always looking at that real personal meaning for that person.
Yeah. And if we look at the context of older adults, right, how does occupational therapy help them? And would it be sort of, and would I guess any older adult need occupational therapy, or would they have had some sort of major health issue or disability of some sort?
It's really interesting. I think traditionally, even younger people, but particularly older people, have come in contact with occupational therapy because they've had an illness mm-hmm. or a diagnosis, and then they would get referred. But more and more occupational therapists are working in that preventative care. So as we look at the ageing process across that life course, it's sort of helping people to age healthily and to prevent some of the illnesses or accidents. So a very classic example is fall preventions. Mm-hmm. And falls, you know, around the world and globally cost health services a lot of money. And if somebody falls, not only do you have physical aspects of mm-hmm. that, but there's a lot of sort of like mental health aspects. So if somebody falls, generally their confidence and anxiety increases. So if we can prevent falls, we not only preserve somebody in their home or doing day-to-day activities. You know, if somebody falls, so they might not want to go outside shopping because they're fearful of things. So preventing that fall helps people to regain that independence, but it also helps them to keep doing the things that they want to do, as well as keeping costs of healthcare down. So you might come in touch with somebody after an illness, but increasingly you will see more occupational therapists in that preventative care. And I think the other big point with that is thinking that occupational therapy is not just about physical elements of people's health. There is a lot about mental health aspects. And we certainly see that as people are ageing, whether that be a lack of confidence because their physical capacity to do activities decreases. Sometimes, you know, there is a lot linked around sort of like depression, of lack of roles that go away from them. Retirement is a big issue. You know, people look forward to retirement for a long time, but then actually when it does happen, there can be a real loss of role and a real loss of identity, and occupational therapists can help with that as well. So I would sort of say, in an ideal world, occupational therapists will be there through the whole sort of lifespan of people, helping them to look at whatever next stage is coming in their life. But then once we've got somebody in those later years, is helping them to keep as independent as possible. And that's working with the person on what's important to them, working on the occupations, so the activities that they want to do, but also looking at the environment. And the environment can be the physical environment that somebody lives in, so helping to adapt the house so it's easier to live in. It might be working with policymakers and other sectors such as public transport and making sure that they're accessible to older people. So there's lots of points where occupational therapists can get involved.
So occupational therapy isn't just about, you know, I think people might think it's just about what happens in a particular health facility, but it's not, right? It's beyond that. It's looking throughout, you know, throughout all the daily activities of an older person, for example, and all their needs, you know, whether they're in the house, in a healthcare facility, in public spaces, you look at that whole spectrum.
Absolutely. It's that, yes, the first point of contact might be in the hospital after, say, a stroke, but really what the occupational therapist is concerned about is how's that person going to go home? What are they going home to? And how are they going to be independent in that home? And like you say, looking at the access to the home, so they're not trapped in their home because of inaccessibility, and making sure, I mean, there's a lot of work, and a lot of the work that I do in the UK and my business partners is around home adaptations and helping people to adjust their homes. And I think, again, there's now more emphasis on pre-planning for that. So a lot of work done around like what might future generations need in homes, and looking at multi-generational homes so that we don't get to a point where we are old and suddenly trying to make changes then, that there are small changes that we can make throughout sort of like our life to make homes more accessible.
Retrofitting home isn't always the easiest thing, especially if things are already built into place, you don't have the space. But let's talk about that for a little bit, right? Yeah. As from an occupational therapist's perspective, what sort of home modifications are we talking about to enable older adults to, you know, just carry out these daily activities? Could you give us some examples?
Yeah, I mean, some of the classic ones are things around sort of like footfall and looking and keeping free spaces around the house. So again, going back to fall prevention, trying to avoid like carpets or rugs that move, things where you may trip from them, making sure that there's lots of space to be able to move around. What you don't want people is grabbing hold of furniture. So looking at sort of like safe places where there may be grab rails for people to hold on to. So really looking at that accessibility as people walk around their homes. Helping them to think about where they spend most of their time. Things such as seating, a good armchair is really important to help with maintaining posture and supporting your muscles so that when you are resting, your body is resting in a good way. So making sure that seats have good cushioning that support muscles, because obviously as we get older, we tend to lose weight. Mm-hmm. So it's about helping the body to feel supported. But armchairs, so that when we get out of chairs, we can use the arms to help us to get out of there, putting less pressure through knee joints, helping people to think about all those activities that we take for granted when we're younger.
That's right.
But become a little bit more difficult as the joints start to age. So looking, you know, at better ways of getting in and out of chairs, looking at where things are positioned in the kitchen, you know, making sure that things are in easy reach to avoid too much movement. And then if we look at sort of like the dementia sort of side of that, or cognitive impairments, and, you know, even without sort of like a dementia diagnosis or Alzheimer's, you know, generally cognitive sort of abilities sort of like decrease, it's trying to maintain homes looking like homes. Nobody wants to live in a medical facility. Mm-hmm. So making sure that we introduce things in a way that's appropriate to that person. And there's lots of research coming out now about, you know, making sure that a kitchen looks like a kitchen. At what point do you introduce assistive technology? There's a lot around now, like voice-activated sort of things that's coming up in living rooms, kitchens, bathrooms. You know, I think there's an app now that will do absolutely anything and everything. And you think, oh, that's great for independence if people are, but actually, certainly with cognitive impairments, there's a real critical point of when you introduce that so that people can get used to different ways of doing that. There's lots of other equipment, say, in, you know, kitchens that can help poor, you know, kettle tippers that can help pour drinks safely. Helping people to look, you know, do they use ovens? Do they use microwaves? Again, being very personalised about care so that you're not making assumptions. Making bathrooms more accessible, non-slip floors, seating.
I think what I'm hearing from all of this as well is how family members can make homes safer, but also the signs that family members themselves can look out for, right? If you see an older family member struggling to get up from their seat or struggling to do certain tasks in the kitchen or in the bathroom, that's when you could introduce these small modifications. And at the end of the day, what I'm getting is we want to help them to continue do these things, but do them safely, not just, I think that's a tendency for us to sometimes, if, you know, we see an older family member that they can't do something safely, we just stop them from doing it rather than helping them do it safely.
Exactly. It's very much and I think that's another big part of an occupational therapist role is working with the family around risk assessment, really, because of course we want to keep our older family members safe. But it's about that, like, you know, if you take something away from somebody, it's very hard to help them regain that at a later stage. So noticing that, like you say, at a very early stage, but also protecting families and carers. You know, over the years, unfortunately, I've seen many carers become ill because of over helping, you know, helping people in and out of chairs and hurting their own backs or knees because they've either done that incorrectly or are aging themselves. So we want to protect aging carers as well. So if we can teach good techniques, everybody wins, really.
On the show with me today is Samantha Shan, occupational therapist and president of the World Federation of Occupational Therapists. And we're discussing the role of occupational therapy for older adults on our Healthy Aging segment. We'll be right back after a quick break on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo Ann. On today's episode of Healthy Aging, I'm joined by Samantha Shan, occupational therapist and president of the World Federation of Occupational Therapy and president of the World Federation of Occupational Therapists. And we are discussing the role of occupational therapy in a rapidly aging society. Now, before the break, Samantha was sharing some scenarios where occupational therapy could be introduced. Not just for rehabilitation following a medical illness or disability, but for preventive purposes as well. And, you know, we've highlighted the importance of, you know, understanding that occupational therapy is not just about what's happening at a medical facility, in clinic, but also extends to helping you lead a full and quality life, you know, wherever you are. Now, from your experience, Samantha, do you find that people are, you know, usually open to the idea of occupational therapy? What stops them from seeking help from an occupational therapist? Is it, you know, the knowledge of not knowing that they can do so? Or is it that, you know, they don't want to admit that they need help?
I think it's a whole mixture. I think probably in a large amount of communities, it's lack of knowledge that occupational therapists are there.
Mm-hmm.
Often, you know, you do come into contact with an occupational therapist once you've become ill.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, at that point, the person and family are maybe struggling with a diagnosis as well. So a lot of new information is quite difficult. So I think there's a lot around there about people learning about occupational therapy more than, mm-hmm. you know, and this is great being able to talk about it so people can think, oh, I didn't know about that, but that might be useful for my mother or sister or whatever. And if we're more aware of it, then we seek it out at a time where we're more receptive to have that. I think it's also a profession where we're very good at doing what we do,
mm-hmm.
but we might not shout about it. And there's a saying that if you've come across a good occupational therapist, they've actually taught you to do something and you feel that you've done it yourself, which is right,
mm.
but then people might not, you know, credit the occupational therapist so much.
Yeah. Mm. It's one of those jobs where you're just silently supporting them, isn't it?
Yes, and because you build it, because it's so personalised,
mm-hmm.
and it's so different, you know, it's very hard to say, oh, well, I'm going to come into your home tomorrow and we'll do X, Y, and Z, because until I've come and met you,
you don't know.
I don't know what that X, Y, and Z is going to be, and it might be A, B, and C, and that's absolutely fine.
Mm.
Yeah.
So then in that case, right, say an older adult or their family member is thinking about occupational therapy from a preventive aspect, but you don't know what that person actually needs. When should someone actually start thinking about occupational therapy for prevention?
I mean, you can think about it at any point then, if you're looking for prevention. I would sort of say very much what you were saying earlier is if you start to see, if we take the older population again, if you start to see somebody struggling, getting in and out of the chair, maybe walking a little bit slower, maybe starting to hold on to furniture a little bit more, and yeah, that's the point where you need to be trying to get hold of an occupational therapist before people become too reliant on bad habits, because we know bad habits are very quick to embed but take a long time to stop.
Mm. And they don't necessarily need to know sort of how or what problem to fix, right? It's to have that conversation with your therapist.
Absolutely. I mean, occupational therapists are health-trained professionals. You know, there's a lot of science and evidence base behind what we do. And we know about medical conditions. We learn about anatomy, physiology, psychology. We do all of that. But when we're working with a person or a family, it's not necessarily the diagnosis that's the important thing. We'll be aware of what might happen with that diagnosis and what that might look like in 5 or 10 years' time. But when we're working with the person, the diagnosis isn't the priority. The person is the priority. So what does that diagnosis actually mean to that person? What are they struggling with today that you can help with?
Mm. Yeah. So really, it's that just seek help if you think there's a need for it and then take it from there.
Absolutely, yeah. And everybody will be different. I always use my friend and myself as examples. You know, she's an occupational therapist as well. And she says, you know, if ever she was in a situation where she couldn't dress herself, she would want an occupational therapist to teach her how to dress herself, and that would be, and even if that took her an hour, that would be her main goal, would be able to dress herself independently. Myself, I would be able to accept some help from somebody to dress myself if that saved me energy to then be able to go to the cafe and have a cup of tea with friends. So it's about finding out
what works.
What's that important bit?
All right. You know, we focused quite a lot on, I guess, the individual in the community, you know, in the family. But if we take a step back, right, you're also the president of the World Federation of Occupational Therapists, which I saw on the website describes itself as the global voice for occupational therapy, and you represent occupational therapists worldwide. Tell me more about the role that the Federation plays. And I guess, you know, you're here in Malaysia, right? How is the Federation engaging with occupational therapists here?
Yeah. So as a federation, we're made up of national occupational therapy associations. So we have 105 member organisations at the moment, and they are, for example, like the Malaysia Occupational Therapy Association. And we support our national associations to promote and develop occupational therapy in country. As a World Federation, we're celebrating our 70th anniversary this year, so there is a long history of that. But some of our member organisations are maybe just 1 or 2 years old. The Malaysia Occupational Therapy Association has been a full member of WFOT since 1990, so a long history now. And we work together to help define local policies, national policies and regional policies. So WFOT works at many different levels. We have official collaborations with the World Health Organization. So we are invited to and participate in very high-level meetings looking at strategic planning on healthy ageing, dementia care, work environments, the Mental Health Action Plan. And we work at that high level, ensuring that occupational therapy is mentioned in global action plans. And then we also work more nationally with the national associations, so the Malaysia Occupational Therapy Association, helping them to think about, well, what are the priorities? Where can occupational therapy make the most difference? How can we advocate for and get more positions for occupational therapy? So we've just had a meeting with the Minister of Health to talk about some of these strategies about education of occupational therapists, positions in the Ministry of Health. So we work at a local level and at a high international level, and hopefully somewhere they come together.
And you can bridge that gap.
Yes.
So then, you know, Malaysia, along with, of course, many other nations, have been labelled as an ageing nation, right? We are seeing the ageing population grow worldwide. Do you foresee a demand for occupational therapy increasing? And I guess to elaborate more on what you said, right, how do you see occupational therapy making a difference when it comes to ensuring healthy ageing?
I think, you know, there is a definite sort of need for more occupational therapists globally. From the World Federation point of view, we've been collecting data since 2006. And from 2006 to 2020, we saw a 117% increase in the number of occupational therapists globally. But in most countries, they're still lacking. There's still only one occupational therapy per 10,000 head of population. So there's a long way to go. Whilst we are increasing, we know that that demand is going. I think, you know, with the last 2 years, with the COVID global pandemic, I think all of us have seen our participation in daily activities limited. So we understand when that goes, what impact that has on us. So with that understanding, I think as we all age now, we will want to keep ourselves more active, more involved in our communities, looking for that social and physical contact. And therefore, occupational therapists do that because they help with the function and the social aspects of our life. So a definite increase.
How accessible would you say occupational therapy is? And I guess perhaps maybe if you're not so familiar with what it's like in Malaysia, right? How accessible do you see it in the UK or globally as well? I mean, considering that that is a very huge ratio of 1 to 10,000 population that you've just mentioned.
I think because there are so few at the moment and we need to increase the numbers, we're probably not as accessible as we should, and that's why we need to increase the numbers. And it's about really about health systems and where that first point of contact is. But I also know in Malaysia that there's a lot of work being done on primary health care as well. And as we develop primary health care, that will enable easier access to occupational therapists and physical therapists and other allied health professions, because that's what primary health care will do. At the moment, if we work in a more medical model, then the access defined in the hospital, and that's harder to do the prevention work. So if we can move to a primary health care model, that does really help with that accessibility. And it's something that we're seeing globally. I don't think any country has that primary health care totally covered. So Malaysia's no further behind than many other places, but it's making sure that those policies and recognition of professional autonomy is there. So occupational therapists being able to do their own assessments, plan their own interventions with clients, discharge or keep providing that intervention, but making their own decisions is what is really core in primary health care.
Occupational therapy is a specialization all of its own, isn't it? And we need to recognize that.
Absolutely. So they're specifically trained, educated in occupational therapy. It's not, you know, part of anything else.
Do you think, I guess, governments and policymakers pay enough attention to the importance of having rehabilitation services such as occupational therapy, right, when it comes to the health and well-being of the people? Because often it seems like we're very much, Malaysia included, we're very much focused on treating after the fact, right? Whereas should we be talking more about preventing, and that includes occupational therapy?
Yes, and I think, you know, now is a really, really important time in this. In 2017, the World Health Organization launched their initiative Rehabilitation 2030. And with that, member states, so our governments, so the Ministry of Health in Malaysia, signed up to this initiative of improving access to rehabilitation. And, you know, what the statistics are showing is that around 50% of people that live in low and middle income countries are not able to access rehabilitation services needed. And we also know that during the COVID pandemic, it was rehabilitation services that were hit the most. So there is a real focus on rehabilitation at a very high level at the moment. It's been talked about at that high level. And so it's a good time, but it's a good time for people to be asking for it as well, because we know that governments and policy makers respond to what the public are asking for as well. So as everyday people, we should be saying, no, we should be having access to rehabilitation, and we want high quality rehabilitation. We want professionals that are educated in rehabilitation, and we want to be able to access them easily, and we should be asking for that.
How much of an issue is cost when it comes to accessing rehabilitation, occupational therapy, right? And you know, I guess, what role do you see insurance playing in this? Especially, I guess, not many people do have insurance, or insurance might not even cover such services, especially when we're talking about prevention, right?
Yeah. And I think, again, that's why it's so important that the World Health Organization has put such an emphasis on rehabilitation, and that our governments are doing that, because that means then within their health budget they have to put more money into rehabilitation, because everybody has acknowledged that rehabilitation globally isn't funded as well as other parts of medicine. So we need to act on that while people are very keen on rehabilitation, and make sure that budget is put there. We need to work with insurance providers. Occupational therapy in many countries, even the UK, is not always listed as a particular rehabilitation or allied health profession. It often comes under other, but it doesn't mean to say that it's not covered, but we need to be aware that it's a possibility. So again, it's about people knowing about it and asking for it.
Because if there's no demand, then we won't see it being offered.
Yes, Yeah. And, but, you know, some of the work that we're doing with the World Health Organization, with governments, that there is increasing research and evidence coming out about the cost effectiveness of rehabilitation. The downside of that at the moment is most of that research is in high-income countries. So I think, you know, we really need to be ensuring that research is carried out in middle and lower-income countries to show the cost effectiveness. But there's lots of studies, say, from the United States, from the UK, showing about the money saved on fall preventions, the money saved on home adaptations, and that sort of like accessibility. And if those studies could be replicated in, you know, low and middle income countries, we'll have so much evidence on the cost effectiveness of that. I think there's something around, you know, that if somebody has a fall, there have been fall programs that show, you know, you get for every pound invested, you get £7 back of British money in the long-term investment of a fall prevention.
I think that it goes back to what we say about prevention is better than cure, but also if we want to put it in money terms for policymakers, which always gets their attention, then we can see that in the long term, if we don't prevent, it just adds up cost for your healthcare system because people end up paying more out of pocket, the government have to invest more money into treatment, and it all adds up in the end. And I think that's how we need to try and get their attention by saying that it'll cost them more in the end.
That's it. And it's all to do, there's lots of studies now coming about sort of like cost of care and how many days have been saved by keeping people out of hospital, because being in hospital costs a lot of money. So if you can keep somebody at home, what money does that save? The other aspect of that is how much money you can save in carers as well, because if a family member has to give up a job to look after somebody that is not managing, not only have you lost the cost effectiveness of the person with the illness or disability, you lose the cost of the person caring as well. So it's very multi-sectorial. So whilst we can look at it as a health issue, it's also important that we look at it as a real sort of like societal issue, and that everybody's talking to each other.
And hopefully, you know, we've shed more light on this topic today. Thank you so much for joining me today, Samantha.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking to Samantha Shan, occupational therapist and president of the World Federation of Occupational Therapists, on our Healthy Aging series, and we've been discussing the role of occupational therapy for older adults. I'm Lim Suen, and this has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.